Hey everybody, welcome to the Faith and Fandom Podcast. Today we are on So I Finally Watched The Chosen, episode 3, 4, 5, and 6 of season 3. Jumping into this, it's been a minute since I've been on here. Life has been bananas, and it's only going to get more crazy, so I'm trying to finish out season 3 before the summer really hits. So there should be one more episode in this series before waiting for season 4 to come out. And I can actually kind of be on time with the rest of you. So season 3, episode 3, we start out, we get the flashback of Jesus, Mary, and Joseph while Jesus is a kid, which is a nice touch because we don't always get a lot of that. And I really do enjoy that. I like the fact that it addresses his brothers and such, that they didn't want to be around, because honestly, how hard would it be to be Jesus's brothers and sisters and see him be perfect, and obviously you're not? And even that, like, I don't know if you've ever been the good sheep in the family, but being the good sheep sometimes can be just as hard as being the black sheep. Sometimes if your wool is too white, it can make your experience pretty difficult in that capacity too. And, but it was neat seeing to do that, getting to see Mary excited, or getting to see Jesus excited about going home. And honestly, I did a little shout, when Mary and Martha came in, because I love Mary and Martha. Y'all know, or if you do know, I wrote a Mary and Martha book a year or so ago. And just really love their story and love their dynamics. So it was great getting to see them in episode 3. And, you know, there's also just the overwhelming tone of the episode of sensing the sadness that was coming in the future. But again, it was cool seeing Jesus with his mom. And, yeah, that was neat. I enjoy getting to watch that. But also, I don't know if I ever pictured Jesus's room growing up before. So that's a whole fun experience. I love that the sheep were named Cain and Abel. That was a great little joke. And, you know, as you get into more a little bit of the religious culture there, the amount of shade Jesus gets from Rabbi Benjamin, and the rumors that are spreading and stuff is pretty intense. Also, that little game that they played together looked pretty fun. And it was also just kind of fun to see Jesus kind of suck at a sport. So either way, fun. But like, I was glad to see Jesus' friendship relationship with the people there in his town and with it. But yeah, it was a tense episode. And this is one of those stories that I was curious how they were going to execute. Because again, Jesus almost getting thrown off a cliff by his friends and family literally is one of my favorite stories, just because it's humanizing and it gives us a picture that it wasn't all, you know, bubblegum and sunshine when he was actually doing that. Yeah, it was a lot. But Jesus literally balked in the face of the religious leaders, and you know, the fact that he truly treated his backpack like a home was something that made me feel seen, made me feel heard. There was a Supertones lyric when I was a teenager that said, with a Vanna road map, keep my life in my backpack. And I feel like there's times my life literally is my backpack. And I know that's hard. But Jesus was, you know, with his backpack, I thought was neat. But, you know, as he made the statement in the temple, if you cannot accept that you are spiritually poor and captive in the same way as the Gentile woman that recognized her need, you know, Jesus just, he didn't pull his punches in his hometown. And I know that if, even in, when I'm preaching in my own churches on Sunday, that it's hard for me not to pull my punches when I'm looking at people. It's hard for me not to pull my punches when I know someone's backstory, when I know their pain, and to watch Jesus go so hard to watch his friends see how difficult the things he's saying are. And the fact that the people that knew him best rejected him as Messiah. Because I still feel like the phrase a prophet gets no honor in his hometown, that's one of the realest things in the world, y'all. Knowing for me personally, like, I'm more respected as an author, writer, whatever, anywhere outside of my own hometown. And I also really liked, as the episode concluded, where you got to see a little more backstory interaction with Joseph and Jesus, and that Joseph knew what was coming, and he said that, you know, I don't suppose you'll bear sons, but, you know, to show him, you know, kind of what his future held, about being set free from slavery, about the yoke, the harness that was passed down. It was just, it was beautiful. And then, you know, when Jesus saw the tomb and everything else, that it was just, it was really solid. Really enjoyed the experience. The one thing I will say too, though, is that they, really did, they didn't water down the him throwing, Jesus off the cliff portion, but I really felt like they made it a little less razzle dazzle. I feel like it really was more like he vanished, like, completely physically, spiritually in front of them. I don't feel like it was just like the crowd stopped. But either way, I also know that they can't go full sci-fi budget with what they're doing. But I did enjoy it, and it was a really good experience, and I really enjoyed the episode as a whole. I really enjoyed it. And so let's move on to episode 4. Episodes 4 and 5 are a two-part story of one of my absolute favorite Bible stories in Scripture. And it's the woman who is healed from her 12 years of bleeding, and the woman who, you know, Jairus's daughter being raised. But really, one of the dopest things about episode 4 is the black and white montage at the beginning, where we get to see the disciples actually acting out the faith and the miracles that Jesus gave them when he sent them out on their own missions, and how absolutely surprised that they were from their own experiences. And that's beautiful to me, because I feel like the disciples getting sent out and doing these miracles and stuff is not something we cover in churches a lot. Like, I think in my bajillion years of ministry stuff, I'd have only heard it mentioned once or twice. You know, usually it'll talk about the fact that he tells them how to be sent out, but not actually what it went for them. And I know we don't have all the details in Scripture with that, but I think it's important. I think we need to really hit home sometimes that that was a real part of their ministry. It wasn't just following. They had to go out on their own, because I feel like church culture kind of dictates just keep following. Don't worry about actually doing any of the work on your own. But watching the miracles and the black and white montage was absolutely wonderful. The different healings, the different way things went with that, I thought was absolutely glorious. Seeing the way the different teams impacted together, I just thought that was fantastic. And then getting to see them all come back together, that was a great thing too. But like, I thought a neat thing was seeing how uncomfortable it was for some of them to sit in the synagogue and hear others teaching after being in the presence of Jesus and doing the ministry that they had done. It's a lot harder to go back to kind of just sitting around and listening to the government and the religious leaders and such like that to deal with it in that capacity. The thing with the government interacting with the synagogue when the sewage problem backed up. I mean, that's just real life stuff that I don't think we pay enough attention to or even think about that these people were dealing with on a regular basis, is they actually had to deal with that type of stuff. I also really enjoyed the relationship between Rabbi Yusuf, and Jairus. I love that we got a setup for Jairus several episodes in, that he wasn't just some random dude who needed his daughter healed. I thought it was a great way to write backstory for that. And it was well executed. And also helped really develop the character of Rabbi Yusuf in his own right with that. And the fact that he wanted to write that letter and keep it hidden. I loved their whole deal, their whole story. Yeah. And that it was something really beautiful. Really, really enjoyed Jairus and Yusuf together. And which when it plays out, obviously it's an even better story. And they did a good job. I thought it was really, really smart to show the cistern being broken in town as a way to set up the woman who was bleeding with the, I just thought that was super smart. That was a really great way to introduce in terms of writing and exposition that really helped put that in the right place. Peter and Eden. Peter and Eden. I think the idea to have a story about Eden having a miscarriage, and keeping that from Peter, that's a bold choice. I'm not saying it's a bad choice at all. But man, it's another layer of stuff that we, you know, obviously couldn't consider. Most of us never thought about. Like, again, the only time we hear about Peter being married is the fact that his mother-in-law was sick and dying. But man, it added a layer, and I really think Eden's acting was just superb. And you know, it was just one of those things of just expecting him to know what was going on. But yeah, it was a lot. The Eden miscarriage storyline was absolutely a lot. And yeah, I being someone who's been on the parental end of miscarriages and dealing with that, it's nice to see a representation, but also hard. The fact that they had the depiction of the woman who was bleeding for 12 years, the fact that she was someone who did other people's laundry, again, great twist, great introduction to those things. I also think that they exposed that Jairus's daughter, her sickness, her illness came from the broken cistern water, is a lot. Again, just good, smart, good storytelling. And I feel like the dynamic with Tamar, and Mary is rough, and their attitude about, oh, you could sell your jewelry, etc. I know it gets a little more into that in the further episode. But man, like their whole thing with the olive business and everything else, and setting up Tamar as a complicated character and not just an easygoing one. Really smooth, really enjoyed that. You know, how they really played that all together. Because having somebody be disagreeable with Mary, like, automatically builds you up as a villain. And you know, we being able to see that dynamic is more than that. Watching the disciples invade Eden's home and have their conversations and be frustrated. And I love that Andrew is the first one to notice that something's wrong with Mary, not Peter. And yeah, it's a thing. But again, the Eden and the Eden story playing out, Jairus and Yusuf continuing to go on through story. And then we get to the rabbi that openly condemns Jesus's style of teaching and the Son of Man phrasing and things like that. It's a lot. And again, I do really appreciate the Peter storyline with that and the tensions they're facing. I also thought it was a really neat way of introducing Gaius and Peter as friends, being able to actually put them in a place where they can connect together and build a relationship, and seeing the hot-headed Jewish man become homies with the Roman was pretty neat. And the fact that, you know, that also will build a bigger tie to Matthew and Peter as well as they move forward with it. But I really thought this was a great time for Gaius to shine as a storyteller. And storytelling shine Gaius in who he was and what he was doing. I thought it was just really smooth in how they actually pulled that off together. So yeah. And episode 5, Clean Part 2, opens with a warning that, you know, this next image might disturb some people. And, you know, I appreciate the fact that they give us those. Because different things do disturb different people. And my kids are pretty sensitive when it comes to certain things. So it was nice. And as we open with that scene 2 weeks earlier with the miscarriage with with Eden. It was hard to watch. It was hard. And then, you know, we go straight from that to jumping into watching Jairus's daughter becoming sick and weak. And the whole thing with the flutes and the professional wailers and stuff, my kids were like, was that real? Is that a thing? And, you know, it's not an easy concept to digest. And, you know, it's like people had their different things. And again, I don't want to complain about the the Peter and Eden story, but I feel like it was scattered at weird moments. Like, I feel like I'm perfectly amount with the amount of screen time it got, but I feel like I would rather it gotten a separate section and not have it just dashed as much as just in the story, because I felt like it kind of took the wind out of it a little bit. Watching Zebedee walk away from fishing now that his sons were actually in the place they were supposed to be and that they had their role, I thought that was a really neat touch. The fact that we get Zebedee really as a character, I thought that was pretty great. You know, also that some of the disciples were considering that Peter was a traitor because he was talking to a Roman. Yeah, just quickly how easily it was for these guys to flip on each other. But the fact that they found the bleeding woman and that they were willing to take her to Jesus that quickly, I thought that was great. And I really, really loved seeing Gaius and Peter work on the cistern together. And like the high five, dap me up thing when they were working on it together, drinking water out of the same thing. It's just, you forget how much cultural bias and issues were going on at that time until you see a picture like this. And when it jumps into the point of the story where Jairus' daughter is passing, and he instantly is showing you, look, I believe in Jesus, let's roll, let's do this. It was a lot. And again, we get the disciples sitting and talking, asking about fasting and what they're doing with that. And I love Jesus' explanation in it, but I think one of my favorite statements was Philip's statement, being a revolutionary is fun. I thought that was because, you know, Jesus was trying to say that he's trying to, the way of this world won't bring the kingdom. It was his new, that his kingdom's not going to fit into the old confines of the world. And yeah, I thought that was a good way for us to see it, for us to understand it. Also, I really like Matthew's stubble right now. Matthew's stubble is on point at this line in the story. Yeah. So it's continuing to move on. We finally get to the crowded streets and the woman reaching out for Jesus's cloak. And the kind of douchey dude that's like trying to get her kicked out of the crowd for being unclean. It's a nice little added layer of opposition and strategic stuff. And she's, you know, she's saying, I won't make him unclean. And it was really neat that I actually ended up watching this episode, episode 5, right when, is this 4? No, this, I ended up watching episode 5 right when we were writing and preaching a sermon on this. And we're doing a series on women in the Bible, and we were doing it on the lady who was bleeding. And I love the way that they portrayed the power going out of him, the woman actually instantly feeling it, and the way he calls her daughter, and she's like, I'm no one's daughter. And listen, the ugly tears, so freaking beautiful. And I also love that Jesus said, look, I need y'all to leave me alone so I can go heal this man's daughter. That was just gorgeous. Now, on a side note, on a really, really deep cut of Christian nerd culture, there's a musical rock opera called Hero, as if Jesus would have come in the year 2000 instead of 2000 years ago. And Jairus is played by T-Bone, and he's a gangbanger. And so he's asking Jesus to raise his daughter, like saying that she's raised in Harlem. It's a masterpiece. You should check that out. Just Jairus's faith, the way that the wailers and weepers and stuff were mocking Jesus, and Jairus's faith telling everybody to get out, the fact they were willing to buck in the face of the system, I just really love that. And you know, the life change that was going to happen for Jairus with this. And I, you know, when Jesus told the rabbi outside, he's like, what if I don't, you know, so what's going to happen if I don't do what you told me to do? And so Jesus agrees to do it. You know, he that man has no authority over him, but Jesus is still agreeing to literally do what he's saying. But he gathered all his friends and he said, like, I just wanted to go for a swim. I think that's funny. Was a little outwardly like saucy for Jesus, maybe. I don't know, but I think it was funny, and I really appreciated the fact that it happened the way it did. I just wanted to go for a swim. I thought that was great. The fact they had them chicken fighting, I thought was crazy too. But that also set us up for the pain of Eden watching everybody else have a blast, while she suffered in silence, which I'm glad they finally brought around in episode 6 where they addressed it, because, man, I didn't want this to go on a lot longer. Because, again, I'm glad they brought that storyline in, but it got painful to watch after a while with it. And then we come to episode 6, and with episode 6, we are in that place of Pontius Pilate's wife having this vision about Jesus and the serpent and the sleeping disciples and everything. And that this really felt like what they had the garden scene in The Passion of the Christ. It had strong vibes like that. I also never pictured Pontius Pilate as a young dude, or that his wife would be young. And all the disciples sharpening their knives and practicing their skit, like talking about self-defense, and Peter teaching Matthew how to stab a dude with a pen. Like, I feel like this was some filler, but also it was good for setting up the tension in the situation. But yeah, it's still a weird scenario to be in that place. And where we have Praetor, or whatever the head Roman government dude who is beefing with Pilate, and just the conversation between Pontius Pilate and the detective guy about Jesus and all those things. I really loved that. I loved getting to see a bigger picture of the Roman situation there and how that plays out. I also thought it was neat for the dude to break into the disciples' barracks or whatever, because he said that people needed to hear the rest of what they were going through. I just thought it was neat. Again, more layers we don't really think about. Also, again, we got that nice fleshed out scene with Tamar and Mary where they talked about their backstories, and you do everything wrong, you do everything right, and see how that goes with there. And their relationship was nice. It was really nice to see that kind of a payoff, to give them both a chance to really act and do something good with it. Yeah, it was neat. It was neat to be able to see how that worked out and for them to go that forward with it. And yeah, the Pontius Pilate scene was good. Mary and Peter's issue was Eden and Peter's issue was still rough. And, you know, I was really proud of Peter for shutting down the invitation and, you know, telling the guys to leave. But the fact that Eden was gone was just like, oh, come on, we were so close. I also love the fact of seeing that Gaius couldn't just roll into the tent city and cause damage. That he actually had been changed to the point where he wasn't that guy, if he ever was that guy. And I really think it was powerful the way they had the zealots close in on Simon, but leave changed in the scenario. And again, this one scene where Jesus is in front of the crowd. Now, in this one crowd, we had a swarm of different people. We had zealots, Romans, disciples, Pharisees, miracle receivers, and all these people that were in the process of seeing who Jesus was. Yet Jesus gave one of his harshest messages to the religious leaders, to John's disciples, and all of that. It's just one of the solid things to watch Jesus be stern but loving, and to watch the way that he was patient with us. And I'm grateful that God's patient with me. When he looks at the one opposing rabbi and says, don't miss it. Those of you who reject of John's repentance, and those of you who are now rejecting mine, you remind me of children in the marketplace that play games while the adults are busy. And you know how they pretend, the adults. Listen, it's just one of those things, like, we keep ignoring God and we're pretending. I also love the way that Gaius helped defuse the situation, along with Jairus. They're just smart. And it's like, these are these low-key people that are intrigued and love Jesus, but they got to keep their distance and make sure he doesn't get killed. And then watching the way the zealots responded to Simon at the end, I just thought that was a really neat turnaround. And then Jesus being asked to heal his friends all the way from episode 1 or 2, the man with his limp and the lady who was blind, and when he healed her, you know, the fact that her statement was, I can see you're not as handsome as you said. I mean, literally first line after being healed, she had a nice slap. I thought it was great. Enjoyed seeing how these things played out. And finally, at the end of the episode, is when we actually got the Peter and Eden conversation, and just watching them kind of collapse on the floor together in sadness was beautiful, and it's accurate. So that's my thoughts on those episodes. I'm really loving it. I'm sad there's only 2 episodes left in this season. I know that they're currently halfway through filming season 4. And so I look forward to actually how that's going to be once they get to that point. So yeah, if you have thoughts, comments, or anything like that, let me know. And I hope you're enjoying the journey as well. So thanks for everybody that told me to watch this for years, and I ignored you. Good work. Also, before I go, I want to take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters, just for being so cool and for helping out. Jonathan Herman, Ron Petit, Tesh Norton, Scott Ward, Alicia Benson, Candace Davis, Jay Sheed, Jillian, Jason Crutchfield, Mike Perna, Todd Turner, John Jacobs, Zach Harris, Caleb Grimm, Jeanette Skagg, Chris Poirier, Jason Bullock, Christina Ray, Sarah Lewis, Patrick Gale, Rebecca Godlove, and Adam Davis. Thank you all so much for supporting the way that you do and helping make all of this possible. We've got 2 of our biggest shows of the year coming up in the next month, and I'm ordering new shirts and stickers and t-shirts and trying to make sure I'm ready for everything. And knowing that y'all support the way you do takes a huge load off of that. So thank you so much. And look forward to seeing you at a con soon.